This is James Throckmorton, and today we're going to talk about the news and current events. Okay. I'm joking. We're really not, and yet we are. If you've listened to news the last little while, there's a lot of talk about globalization. It's been around a long time, one world government, and there's been a lot of conspiracy theories and this and that. But now, and there is a worldwide move to globalize, and it's been taking place for a long time there. As far as trade and everything, it's well underway, a globalization, and people have a dream of a one world government. It's like most of mankind's dreams. It's a dream. It's actually a fantasy. It's a fairy tale. We're going to look at the Bible and see what the Bible actually prophesies about nations and nationalities. And so let's just review a little biblical history, human history. And of course, we're going to be doing this from a perspective of all us dumb people that actually believe in God and actually believe that God has a plan, a program that he's working out. Of course, that in the eyes of the world makes us very dumb. But we'll just wait and let it run its course and see who the dumb ones are.
That's right.
Let's just for a moment think back in time to the time of the flood. And after the flood, human race had been reduced drastically. We don't know what the population before the flood, but it was a large population. You can just, and I've seen this, I don't have it before me, but I've seen this of the statistics of going back several centuries and how population could increase so drastically by the time of the flood. And I know we've had the opportunity over the years to take pictures of families, maybe a 50th or a 60th wedding anniversary, and you have the couple that's been married 50 or 60 years with all their descendants. It gets to be a big number of people real quick in 50 years. But anyway, the whole human race had to come from the three sons of Noah and their wives. And in these three sons, we see something that all these smart people look at it and think it was a mistake of evolution that the different nationalities of people, and let's use that term nationality instead of race, because we don't want to be racist, even though it's not an evolutionary mistake. It was something that God has designed. And I've heard this on two or three, four documentaries about DNA, that they said that the DNA origin goes back to four females. And it's interesting that that's what the Bible teaches, that you would have had Eve, and all those nationalities had to be present in the genetic makeup in Eve. And then you had Noah's three sons and their wives. There's the other three females. So it makes her four females that the Bible says that the nationalities came from. And it wasn't a mistake. It wasn't because people have different skin tones. It wasn't because they couldn't process vitamin D from the sun. And there's actually, it was predesigned for a purpose. a purpose that's beyond human understanding, because human beings, they don't know what God's plan is, and they certainly don't think like God. And that's pretty empty statement itself, because that's self-evident. And so we come up to chapter 11 of Genesis, and there's a period of time on the earth after the flood. And, you know, in the Bible, just a few verses will skip hundreds and thousands of years sometimes. And if we look in Genesis, the 10th chapter, verse 32, it goes through and lists genealogy from Noah and his sons. And it doesn't give all of them, but down until this particular point in time. And verse 31 of chapter 10 says, "These are the sons of Shem, after their families, after their tongues, in their lands, after their nations." And so it uses the word nations there again. "These are the families of the sons of Noah," and this is inclusive of several verses that we didn't read, but that are in chapter 10. "These are the families of the sons of Noah after their generations and their nations. By these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood." So God divided the nations. We're going to read a scripture a little later that after the return of Jesus Christ, that's going to be one of the first things he does, is divide the nations again. So we've already answered our question. Is there going to be globalization of the whole world? Not for a long time. Not till after the millennial reign of Christ, certainly. And now I'm not saying there won't be attempts, but there won't be globalization. One world government with a king of kings and a lord of lords. There will be a one world government, but it'll be God's government at a point in time. But that doesn't happen for a long time, for more than 1,000 years after the return of Christ. And we'll talk about a little of that. In chapter 11, we come to an interesting part of the Bible, because we see that God had given these nations, he had divided them. And he had, that is self-evident, that he had sent them out to repopulate the earth. And it's not written here, but it's sort of self-evident if we look at the rest of the story, that they didn't go. They wanted to stick all together. And the whole earth was of one language and one speech. And it came to pass, as they sojourned from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. So they found them a place, and they just said, "Hey, we're going to stay here." And they said one to another, "Go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly." And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they say, "Go, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach into the heavens, and let us make a name, lest we be scattered abroad on the face of the whole earth." We don't really know what they were doing. This is a very little information about their mindset and what they were really trying to do. I suspect that there was a good number of them that were trying to figure a way from God ever having to be able to correct them again. But it doesn't really tell us anything, except they built a tower. That's all it tells us. But we do know what God did here. Verse 5, And the Eternal came down to see the city and the tower. He came and looked at it, which the children of men builded. And the Eternal said, Behold, the people is one, and they have one language. And they began to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. He knew that they were working together, and if he hadn't have done this, what would say that they wouldn't have already been able to develop a lot of what we call modern technology rather quick. And like I say, we could go off into the dream world there, but anyway, God says there wasn't anything that they imagined that they wouldn't be able to pull off, because that's one of the things that God created in human beings. He made man in his likeness and his image, and God is a creator, and so is man, creator and a builder. And so God says, okay, they want to do this, here's what I'm going to do. And verse 7, let us go down and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. And so the Eternal scattered them abroad thence upon the face of the earth, and left off to build the city. And the name was called Babel. In fact, the term Babylon comes from that. And there's a couple of things that tells us. You know, human beings are so vain that they think that they have, that their ancestors crawled up out of the slime and taught themselves to speak. And this tells us, and of course, there's a lot of intellectuals out there who would disagree with me, that God is the author of language. He's the author of language. And language will make you develop a nation. I'll get real sarcastic here. Just say that you got some Polish people speak Polish language, and then you've got some people that are redneck Southerners, and you put them together. Mm-hmm. Polish language, the Greek language, some of those languages are beyond my comprehension at being able to read the street names, much less speak the language. And there's also something, and I've never actually observed this myself, but I have no reason to doubt it, that there would be people that have had certain traumatic events happen in their life. Maybe they go into a coma, and when they woke up, I've seen several documentaries about this on numerous occasions, and I have no reason to disbelieve it, that the person would wake up and speak another language and speak it perfectly, as if they had been born speaking that language. And so, and then we have the New Testament biblical example of the day of Pentecost, where everyone heard in their own language. It wasn't a miracle of speaking, it was a miracle of hearing. And so they spoke in their different languages. They heard it in their own language. And so we see here early in the biblically recorded history of man, and that's what the Bible tells us, some things that we couldn't know otherwise, is that God intended for there to be different nations, different cultures. I had a church organization that I previously belonged to, and he made a statement one time, he just wished God had called a better class people. Now, to make a statement like that is self-endearing. It has to really shows both those statements somebody that really thinks a lot of themselves. Mm-hmm. Thinks a lot of themselves. And, you know, that most people miss this in the New Testament. They totally missed it in the ministry of Jesus Christ. One of the things that the scribes and Pharisees hated about Christ, he wasn't a snob. He would treat everybody alike. He'd sit down with a rich man, and he would also sit down with the poor man. It wouldn't make a difference. Kipling has a poem named If, and it's something he wrote for his son to be able to walk with kings and not lose the common touch. That's what Christ was able to do. He was God, and he didn't view himself as a human being as being better than somebody else. In fact, if you'll read it in context, and one of the most misunderstood parables in all the Bible is Lazarus and the rich man. That's the context. That's what Christ is talking to him about. He makes up a story, because it is a made-up story, because the events that people pick out to explain it are events that haven't happened yet. And so it was a story. And so God is much more tolerant than human beings are. And the thing about calling a better class of people, God did. He called the common folk. That's who the first fruits will be made out of. If you'll look at yourself, that is one of the qualifications. Most cases. I'm not saying that God can't make exceptions, because he does. But in general, the rich won't listen to him. And when I talk about rich, I'm not talking about having money. I'm talking about the arrogant, the snobs. That's a word everybody can understand. Mm-hmm. And so the only point I wanted to make so far is that nations and nationalities have an origin in what God's plan for mankind is. Those different nationalities are not a product of some accident of evolution. They're a product of God's design and plan. And now if we'll turn over to Matthew, the 24th chapter. Well, we'll take a little time and go through Matthew 24 later. I'm going to go on over to Matthew 25. And let's go down to about verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, so that gives us the time frame, and all the holy angels with him, then he shall sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations. So at the return of Christ, there's still going to be nations on the earth. So the one world government hadn't succeeded. I'll make a comment about that one world government in just a moment, but I want to finish this. Separate them one from another as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And I think we all understand the biblical terminology here of sheep and goats. Christ didn't have the characteristics of goat. He had the characteristics of a sheep. Biblically, I'm certainly not an expert on sheep and goats. In fact, I don't know much about them except to recognize the difference when I see them. Biblically, the goats were the rebellious ones, and the sheep were the humble ones. If God had picked a better class of people, like we were talking a while ago, the people that say that are the goats. They're the goats. Verse 32, "And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, and his goats on the left hand." Now, biblically, left and right mean something. Your right-hand man is somebody you can depend on. Left-hand man, you got to watch him. That's just general concept of that terminology. "Then shall the king say unto them on the right hand, to the sheep, Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the earth." He goes on and makes a comparison of between the conduct of the sheep and the goats, and I'm not going to go through that. You can do that later if you want to. But it's evident from this scripture that at the return of Christ, and when he sets up his kingdom, that there's going to be nations, nationalities. Those nationalities will maybe speak their own tongue. Maybe there'll be a universal language of some kind. There is a slight indication of that in the scriptures, but we don't know that. We'll hope it's not Greek or Polish. And I think what the most complex, detailed language on the face of the earth is Australian Aborigines. I've heard that. It's most descriptive language that exists, because it's very old. The English language is a new language, a lot less than 1,000 years old. I want to go through something now that's just sort of current events, something that those people that are students of the Bible and believe the Bible have certainly read about the end of the age, the end time. They're so simple-minded, they actually believe Christ when he said, "I will come again." And they actually believe Christ when he said that he'll reign 1,000 years. I remember hearing a radio preacher one time on the local radio station. I used to spend most of my life in the dark room making prints, and I always kept radio on, and here I was right in the middle of something and couldn't stop, and here a crazy preacher came on, and I used that word without hesitation or apology, because he made a point and actually offered, I think it was $500 or something, to anybody that could show him in the Bible where they would be 1,000-year reign of Christ. Huh. Well, I knew what brand of religion he was propagating, and you'd think that anybody had read the Bible would know better than to do that. But if you'd have called his hand on it, and I doubt if there was enough people listening in his audience to do that, and if there was that many listening, they wasn't smart enough. That he would have had a disclaimer, like I've heard some Protestant ministers use, about the book of Revelation, because that's where it talks about the millennial reign. It talks about it other places in the Bible, but it specifically says a millennial reign, 1,000 years. And he would have said the same thing. Well, that's really not part of the New Testament. That was debatable whether they even include it. In fact, I heard one Methodist, and I'll call his denomination minister, say, well, they nearly didn't put that in the Bible. Well, who are they? Who are they? It is in the Bible, and it's the most authoritarian book in the Bible, because at the end of it, there's a curse on anybody, a curse from God, that would add to it or take away from it. So the guy that would pull that out. But anyway, this guy really thought he was smart. Because, see, that's what most people do. If they hear some slick-talking, stage-prancing preacher make some idiotic decree, they'll tend to believe him. Human nature. Mm-hmm. Human nature.